for example. Who else in here? How else do you scare yourself? Let's get some good examples in here. Get it out of the way. Yeah. Shit, that'll do it. So what do you do inside your head? Do you make fish? Thank you for that demonstration. So you took a handful of bennies, drank two quarts of coffee, and went up and exploded into flames in front of the audience. Right. Now, here's the counterpart of that is I had a professor who heard that thing, you must be calm and relaxed on the stage. Well, let me tell you, this guy was so relaxed that the thing I remember most is my head going down into the desk. Boom. This guy would come out and he'd go, well, today I'm going to talk about Chaucer. He was terribly excited. The voice in my head went, it's going to be a long, long. I'd start looking through the catalog. Are there any other classes? Is there anything that will fit into my schedule so that I can get this English literature shit out of my way? I don't want to talk about dead English guys. Right, I can't even understand this guy. Chaucer talks like he has apples in his mouth. And they go, if you don't understand in the classics, how can you appreciate life itself? Hey, man, I'd rather be fucking. You know, I could show you girls that would make Chaucer seem like nothing. This was the 60s. I was a rock and roll musician. I want to read Chaucer? I don't think so. And him, he's trying to take a handful of bennies to go and give a lecture so he can get out there and have fun. Right? And, you know, when he gets up to do public speaking, what has it done? He anchored himself. So now, every time he goes back, he doesn't take the bennies. He just reinduces the state. Think about it. He started talking about it, you know. Started getting wired, you know. Hand went immediately to the coffee cup. And then he'd go, hey, let's talk about meditation and relaxation. it'd be really exciting, you know what I mean? You ever felt really, really, really relaxed? I've seen it all. But see, he did this, but look how easy it was for him to reinduce the state. Now, if we were to instead get into this design human engineering thing, what if we were to design the state? I mean, you know, they got designer drugs now, right? Okay, only without taking the drug, you get to design the state. This is what we're going to be doing all through this. Because, you know, not only do you need one, you need several. You know, but you need one when you start, especially with new audiences. So you can walk in and say, come to me, children. Your ass is mine. See, if you have the attitude that, you know, your ass, as someone everybody once stated, I tried to teach people in the audience when they went in, they don't say it out loud, but to really feel like you could just grab a hold of an audience, say, your ass is mine. And this woman turned around and said, my ass is yours. And it was, just like that. Now, the thing was, is that I finally asked her, I said, what are you doing in your head on the way up there? And she said, well, I can see the audience. They're all still. They have little bodies and great big heads and giant eyes. And they're all staring at me. And they're not breathing, but their heads are pulsating like this. And suddenly I screamed, ah! See, this isn't the way to get into the state, right? You've got to build the belief. Last night, how many of you were here last night? Right? Some strange ones here last night, let me tell you. A person comes up and goes, but if you build beliefs, they won't be real. And I said, then none of them are real, lady. I said, what do you mean? She goes, do you question the existence of God? I said, no. I said, your beliefs aren't real. You know, don't get the two mixed up. You know, I mean, if it's a little thing the size of her brain can have consciousness, how could something the size of the universe not? You know, that's kind of, I would think, you know, kind of having a little bit of an ego, you know. You know, it's just like these people, I used to have these relatives years ago who literally got out of their car before they'd get to San Francisco, which is where I live, and pray to God for a parking place. Like, you know, God, hold everything. What was that? Okay, you go down Irving Street, and I'll hold one for you. You know, what could these people be thinking? You know, nothing is the answer. Nothing of importance. Now, to me, that when you understand that you're going to be working, you're going inside and you're going to build new beliefs in people. that it's not so much that you convey information, it's that you're going to create in them states of consciousness that chain together, and you have to build a loop that goes over and over again by itself, or they won't be able to use the information you're giving them. How can you give people sales techniques to use over the telephone? I mean, I taught these telemarketers, but if you can't get them to pick up the phone, the techniques are useless, right? And I mean, you can watch them. They go in there. Here's 200 of them staring at the telephone. Like this, you know, four or five. Literally, at this place, they had over 200 telemarketers, and 80% of the money was made by eight people. Eight of them brought in most of the money. The rest of them had internal dialogue going on wildly, and, you know, it was like instead of calling on the telephone, they went, "How's it going in there, self? Well, should we pick up the phone? I can't stand the rejection day in, day out. Don't get rejected. Don't get rejected. Don't get rejected." Oh, that, and they'll probably, and so then they pick up the phone and they go, "I know you're too busy to talk to me. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I don't want you to feel like I'm taking up too much of your time. Don't feel like this is a ripoff, you know. Am I intruding on you now?" See, if they're not in the state, if they haven't, see, the others had the attitude that they had to get to as many people as possible because there were people missing out on an opportunity. It was they couldn't get one on and get them off fast enough to get to the next one because they didn't want anybody to miss a chance for this. I mean, they were frantic, you know. It was like they had to throw them out. Literally, these people would go, they go, "I'm just 8 o'clock, we're closing." They go, "Just one more call, please, just one more call. I got another one, I've been thinking about this one all day, I got to call this one, got to call this one." And so, as a matter of fact, have you got one yet? I mean, these guys were ferocious. The most ferocious salesmen of all that I ever met were the ones in the military, by the way. Our military, the now all-volunteer army, this is what volunteering amounts to. We have 10 recruiting people who bet 98 or higher percentage. I had to think this through, whether I was going to go down and model this. I'm excited. I'd walk in the door and come out in a uniform. I realized that since, you know, I've sort of paid my dues with the military in another fashion, so to speak. It was during the Vietnam War, and I conscientiously objected to the selective service, not to violence. I said violence was something I approved of, and anybody who would try to enslave me, it was nothing personal against them or their families, because I believed in killing anyone who interfered with your life. So I never even got a draft card. It was sort of took a new tact on that one. It was like, you know, they just sent me this letter that said, "Please do not contact us. And when we have finished reviewing your case." And then years later, they sent me a thing that said I had a lottery number too high, and by which time I was already working with the military, teaching them all about violence. I designed the thing that teaches you to be accurate in our fancy new tank. Because I figure if they're going to run around in this tank and shoot things, I want them to make sure they hit the right thing. That struck me as a worthwhile endeavor. Right? I mean, it's just like they have these things called stingers. And we did the stinger training. And these things shoot airplanes down, right? And airplanes are moving at Mach 2. I want to make sure they hit the right one. I don't want them, you know, like going up and, you know, in the practice grounds and shooting down, you know, TWA Flight 405. Right? And I go, "Sorry, Rich. Didn't read the manual." And there's some real interesting things, like with the stinger thing. The reason they were having trouble hitting anything with the stingers is they put the eye cup on the wrong side, and they put it in the wrong place. Right? And there was a wince factor. You know how when people shoot a gun, they wince and it throws it off? Well, this thing shot a rocket out of it that shoots an airplane down. So you can imagine that this thing's got a bit of a kick. Not to mention when the rocket's going out, there's this stuff back. They line these guys up. They all have these pitted faces. And I look at them all, and I thought, gee, there's a pattern here, you know. I didn't even have to ask a question. I looked at them, they all had pits in their face, you know, little black burn marks all over their face. And, I mean, they were about this big, too. You know, they weren't like, you know, pin size. These were like that. And I said, when this thing shoots off, is there anything to, like, protect your face? And the guy said, "Well, you have a pair of goggles." And I thought, well, that's everything but your face, isn't it? So we added a marvelous device called a piece of plexiglass. It's a thought, isn't it? You know, put a little piece of plexiglass on there. So that, because when it's close, it doesn't have to be that big, you know. But I don't know about you guys. I don't like a rocket spraying my face. And, you know, it might have a tendency to get me before I squeezed one off. And they have to make a decision about whether this is our plane or their plane when the planes are moving at Mach 2. That's like real quick. Twice the speed of sound. Right? That means that it's twice as fast as my voice is getting to you from my mouth. Right? They have to make a split-second decision and pull the trigger. And knowing that when they pull the trigger, it's going to spray the stuff into their face. Right? That's an added dimension. Now, when he goes to get on the stage, reinduces the benzodrine and coffee state, right, goes back, pick... See, this is like, instead of like Tony's, you know, go and find the success inside you, the technique he's using is you go and you find the loser inside yourself, right, and you dive inside it, right? Now, it's not his fault. It's not a personality problem. It's what he was taught to do. They taught us to go in front of classes. At least I know I never went in front of a class in school unless I was being punished, right? I mean, you know, of course, I was such a smart aleck. I liked it, though. And what a thing to call this. What are you, some kind of wise guy? Having wisdom and being smart. There's the criticisms, right? You know, and if you really want to insult him, you tell him to go out and have sex. Right? Now, you take a person like me who's very literal. I take all this stuff very literal. I am like the unconscious. Right? They'd say, go get fucked, and I'd walk out of the room. And when they'd come home to their house, I'd be walking out the front door. I'll tell you, that's the way to get a teacher to say that only once. What are you doing here? Just following instructions. Let them think it through. Now, how about some of the rest of you? I mean, what do you do inside your head? Do some of you start talking really fast? That's usually pretty common. They try to do the whole plan for what they're going to do by speaking as quickly as possible between their chair and the front of the stage. You can watch them. They go in, eyes down. Well, first I'll do this. Because if you talk faster, you can get more done, you know? Any of the others you do? Yes. Great suggestion. Yeah. So either that, the one that works just as well is don't forget everything you're going to say. Don't get nervous. Don't worry. Don't slow your heart down. Don't make it speed up. Speed up. Speed up. Speed up. Speed up. Speed up. Oh, quick, hand me the bennies. No, get the coffee out. Now, the thing is that what we need is a way of interrupting this. So what we're going to do is we're going to make some anchors. And anchors are simply, like his thing is, like if you go back and see yourself making the mistake in front of the ad agency, right? Now, see, I don't know about you. I don't consider that a resource state, okay? It's like when I come up here, I don't go like and pick the five worst experiences of my life, collapse them together, you know, jump inside the giant loser inside myself, right? And come up and go, that this doesn't strike me as the state you want to be in. You want to be in the one that's looking for how you can have fun and how you can do something with stealth. See, because I'll tell you, they're going to give it to you. Every audience, every client I've ever had, if you have the sensory acuity, they hand it to you on the platter that had to drop in one pearl, right? And as the pearl hits the water, it just simply moves the whole lake right where you want it to go. And, I mean, to me, it's the precision with which you can do things. That the metaphor that Steve Andreas used in the front of Frogs into Princes is very much true. That it, for those of you who haven't read it, it basically there's this long, drawn-out story about plumber comes in and they try to fix his pipes that are broken, right? And the plumber like listens like this, goes like this, and he takes a pipe wrench and he goes, whack! And everything comes on and starts working. And he goes over, and the guy says, great. And he hands him a bill for $1,000. The guy goes, $1,000? He says, you were only here a minute. And the guy writes out the bill again, like this, and charges him 10 cents for his time, right? And the rest he charges for knowing where to tap. Now, to me, it's knowing how to go into the right state to be able to get an audience in the right state, to be able to do what you want to do. And it's going to be different. I mean, when you teach a meditation class, it's certainly going to be different than when you're teaching a motivation class for salesmen to get them wound up. But you have to understand, you don't want them wound up in the class necessarily. You will from time to time. But you want them to be wound up when they go out to sell. See, I've seen these motivation courses where people come out of it like they're on benzodrine or something stronger. They come out going, woo! Running out the doors, wound up, all lit up. And then when they go to make a sale, they're scared. Because the trick is you have to get the state of consciousness connected with the activity where it's going to be used. We have to get the state, not just state, but states of consciousness connected, because you have to start out looking at every audience, because every audience is different. I don't care what anybody tells you. They're all different. You can teach the same course twice in a row, but you put different people in it, and it doesn't have to be in a different location. They all have a life of their own. They're all different. There's only so many of that chair. And sometimes you have eight of those people, and they all get in a line there, and the rest of them are empty, you know, and then they fight over it, and they get into things. I mean, you get some wild stuff. People get very possessive about their space. And then sometimes I'll just make them move just to see what happens. Sometimes I'll move what's inside them. You see, what we're going to do here has more to do with a different kind of understanding, and it will when you teach. If you understand by making pictures and you see the stuff in the pictures, it doesn't tell you how to do. And it's what's going to count is when you turn around and your mouth opens. That's the point that matters. See, when he says, I see myself, you saw yourself in that situation, and then you started to see what you saw when you were there, didn't you? See, because that's what guys sitting there do. You don't even have to answer. I know that's why you sit there. You need the extra space to do all that work. Okay, but once you get in there, that's what induces the state. Now, what it tells you is that your brain is capable of this. So now what we want to do is to build states which are wonderful. But they can't be self-indulgent. Because, you see, the worst thing that happens is when people come up here and all they pay attention to is their own feelings. I know, Daryl, you've been through this with me before. And it's excruciating. People get up, they go up here and they go, I'm really nervous in my stomach and I feel, and I say, we don't care, right? We came here because we want some information. We want to be better learned. Teach us something new. We don't want to know about your intestines. And the thing is this is like somebody who had too much fucking Gestalt therapy. You guys remember the Gestalt thing. It goes like this. It goes, you go, they tell somebody in Gestalt therapy, they have their eyes open and they go, I'm nervous, my heart is beating. And you go, close your eyes. And they go, I'm aware people are watching me. Right? That's what people used to do in group therapy. Close their eyes, they're aware of the outside. Open them, they're aware of the inside. Reverse that procedure. Now, what we're going to do is that, see, all of us have been in the position where we were what I call hunting with stealth. Now, I know there a couple of you women looked at me like, sure, does the term shopping mean anything to you? Women are the greatest hunters on the face of the earth, right? It's not guys. You think guys are not good at it. Even, you know, the fucking bear could run them down half the time. They couldn't find it if they had didn't have a dog to do it for them. Hey, stupid human, it's this way. You know. You always see the dogs are always up there, and they always have to stand and wait for the human. Like I said, they're barking, like, come on, will you? It's like, Jesus Christ, can't you smell the bear, for God's sake? If you get your nose out of your ass, you'd know where it was. It's like my dog, you know, it jumps up and it's barking ferociously. And I go, what the hell are you barking at? And it's like, Jesus, Richard, can't you hear the people coming down the street? It's loud as can be, you know. You claim you can hear so well, you can't hear shit. You know, rah, 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 it's over there. I taught my dog to bite and then bark, though, because I didn't like the other sequence. Had no stealth attached. My dog runs up and goes, arr, arr, and then it goes, rah, rah, rah. And you know what? It works better in that sequence, because then they run away when they hear the bark. Because I used to raise big guard dogs, and actually I raised German Shepherds for the military, and they use them because they're smarter than people. They can do all kinds of things. Like dogs, like they all stop and listen, right? And people will talk to each other while they walk through the jungle, right? Right. And the dogs even turn around and they go shh, like this, you know. It's like, can't you hear this fucking Viet Cong out there, for Christ's sake? I said, you guys get down. He goes, I'll go over to the tree, point them out, you shoot them. Right? Okay, are you guys ready? And this is what we trained the dogs to do. And, you know, because they were anti-snipers, because the dogs, see, are smart enough. See, humans look at the ground while they walk. The dogs do this, right? They listen. They have really good senses. And they notice that, you know, things, plus, you know, they can smell the difference. Like, the, you know, because even the foreign countries, people, like, they use their sense of smell. But in the U.S., all we do is wipe it out. We have only five predicates for smell. In French, there's like 2,000 or 3,000, right? And I can understand that, too. I can. Because they speak in their nose so much. They spend a lot of time there. Now, the thing that we're going to do this evening is I want to start by having you find a time and a place where you did something, where you had to engage in it with the kind of stealth where you were looking for opportunity.